Got it.
It is 6:01, and I call the Wednesday, July 12, 2017, Planning and Development Extension Education meeting to order. Number one, certification of compliance with Wisconsin Open Meetings Law.
The certification was filed, was published as a Class II notice in the Kenosha newspaper on June 29th and July 4th.
Okay, thank you. Number two, feature program, tractor safety.
Tractor safety, okay. Well, for the new YIG members, I don't believe we met, and I just want to let you know, my name is Lee Presley. I'm an agriculture educator with UW Extension, and I work between here and Racine County, so 50% in both counties. But a lot of the programs that I do are offered to members of, or residents of both counties. So tractor safety is one program that I do that's offered to pretty much anyone who wants to take it, not only in Kenosha and Racine County, but throughout southeastern Wisconsin. So a little background on the program. This is a program that's been around for a number of years. It meets a federal government requirement that that requires kids under the age of 16 to undergo a 24-hour program if they want to work on farms not owned by their parents, and not only working on farms but driving equipment, large equipment in particular. The federal labor standards want to ensure that those youth, especially if they haven't grown up on a farm, have some background before they hop onto a big tractor, skid loader, or something else in order to prevent accidents. And it also meets a Wisconsin state government requirement that requires youth under the age of 16 to have undergone the same program in order to drive tractors and other types of machinery on public roads. So although you know, they're not yet 16 and have a driver's license, a lot of kids are doing those trips between farms and between fields, and we want to make sure that they, A, just understand some of the basic rules of the road, because you're not always paying attention when you don't have a driver's license of, you know, what a yield means, different things like that. So we try to get them up to speed on some of the basic rules of the road, and then also talk about just general safety on tractors and in and around farms, situations that they might come into contact with, and things to watch out for. So this year I coordinated the program. Typically it's a collaboration with Walworth County, but they currently do not have an agriculture educator. So this year I saw an extreme demand for the program, just parents calling me with over winter wondering if there would be such a program coming up. So I decided to go ahead and do it without Walworth County, which did require some additional kind of footwork on my end in terms of getting insurance for the program. There was an incident a number of years ago with my predecessor during the program that created some, you know, we became aware of some holes in our insurance policies that hadn't covered the tractors that we were using from CNH. So I am very fortunate to be in such a supportive county. Kenosha County added us this program onto their property liability rider, and we were able to get insurance through the tractors for the duration of the program through the county free of charge. So that was really, really great thing to have access to. And I know that's not the case in other counties, where they're not always willing to take on some of the liability that are brought on by these programs that have kids driving large machinery. And, you know, so we do our due diligence to make sure that accidents don't happen, but you know, anything can occur, which we did learn before my time. But So that was kind of one different challenge that I had to deal with this year, but everything worked out quite well. We also are fortunate to have really great partners in CASE, being located in Racine County, providing tractors for the students to ride on, and then also some driving instructors that provide a lot of the outdoor training. So these are trained instructors that work for CASE, and they come out and volunteer for the 24-hour program. They enjoy it. They can get out of the office, away from their computers, and I think they just like being around the kids. So, also Burlington High School is our other primary partner. They provide the site, so a lot of the driving instruction happens in the Burlington parking lot, and then we have classroom instruction that happens just in the classroom, right, right inside. So not necessarily reflective of what they'll see on a farm, but we do try to simulate some of the situations that they'll maybe see driving on public roads. We go through hitching and unhitching implements, backing implements. So a lot of those things can apply even to a farm setting, even if we're doing it in a parking lot. So this year we had quite a big program. I set the limit at 25 kids. That's about as much as I care to handle doing this sort of thing. So we had a full class, and their age ranged from 12 to 16 years old. Not all farm kids. Some of them are city kids that are working or plan to work on farms. Some of them are farm kids, have had many years of driving tractors experience. So, you know, for them it was pretty easy. But in any case, we kind of try to start them all from a starting point of not making assumptions about their skills and abilities, and just kind of getting them up to speed about situations that they didn't really associate a lot of danger with. So it includes, it's a 24-hour program. Part of it is held inside, where we go over content. There's different activities that we do inside. There's a daily review that helps them prepare for a final written test. And then we also have the outside driving instruction as well, where our case instructors work with them to first go over some of the things they want to look for before they even hop on a tractor, doing checks for oil levels, making sure lug nuts are tight on the wheels, doing different things that they might skip over on a day-to-day basis, but just things to look out for before they even start up the tractor and drive. As I mentioned, we talk about implement safety out there, attaching and detaching implements, the dangers of power takeoff, and other things that they can kind of run into when dealing with large pieces of equipment. So like I said, for some of them, this outdoor driving part is not the most challenging, but once we kind of introduce stop signs and, we'll create little obstacles for them to kind of navigate around. The teachers will unexpectedly ask the students to shut down the tractor and to dismount safely. So we kind of try to throw some things in there that might kind of get them thinking about some of the things they might see in the real world. We not only cover tractor safety, but we also do some additional safety training. So the kids learn about fire safety. They get a chance to use a fire extinguisher. We also have some basic EMS training that we do in collaboration with the Gateway Hero Center, which is located just across the street from Burlington High School. So they learn some basic first aid. They put together a first aid kit that they can keep on their tractor if they wish. And we cover just a lot of other things that they might see in and around the farm that aren't necessarily related to the dangers of tractors. So for the activity for tonight, interactive activity,
we get to go drive a tractor.
That's what they were saying. No, it's a problem. Yep, that would have been the true, I would have had to figure out this church piece, which I would have said,
you had that covered.
Yep, right. So yeah, we'll do a quick activity with some pictures here, just trying to get you looking out for some of the potential hazards caused by certain situations. So in this picture, you see a tractor. Anybody see anything that might be, that's a red flag on this tractor? It's an older tractor, so it is lacking one key thing that most modern tractors have.
Roll bar.
Roll bar, yes, of course. So that's one thing we emphasize with the kids, is that a rollover protection structure, or ROPS bar, is one of the most effective structures that you can add to a tractor, or that comes with a tractor, in order to prevent rollover deaths, which are the number one cause of tractor-related accidents on the farm. So we emphasize the importance of, kids are usually the ones put on the older models of tractors that don't have these safety features, and there are incentives available through the state to get retrofit structures that you can add even to an older tractor. So, good job. How about this one?
There's two people on.
three-year-old drive.
Yep, two passengers. That's not recommended. And also, this tractor is equipped with a rollover bar, but it is in the down position, which also happens a lot. So even on tractors that have these safety features, a lot of times operators try to bypass them. They'll disengage. Most tractors these days have seat belts and weight sensors that enable them to turn on only when there's an operator seated. But a lot of times, you know, operators, farmers view those as, you know, time-consuming things, try to do things to get around them and actually negate their effectiveness. So how about this? This is a manure pit. They are in the process of agitating it. There's been a lot in the news about this kind of situation. Anybody have any idea of the dangers that could happen here? Well, manure releases methane, and when manure pits are agitated, those gases are released into the air, and that can cause asphyxiation in the operator. Even if you're in a very open and ventilated area, if the pressure is such in the environment that those gases aren't able to escape, you can become overcome by the gases. So we try to educate kids on some of those things that are kind of unseen dangers of the farm. In fact, there was just an accident this spring with an operator up in the Portage County area who was agitating in an open area, but there happened to be low pressure, and he and some of his animals were overcome and passed away. So little things like that that kids might not associate with death and danger can be.
What do you do to make that safer?
You wouldn't agitate on a day where it's really humid, where the air is really, really dense.
Okay.
Or you would wear a ventilator or something to provide a supplemental source of oxygen. And so we emphasize that for not only working in and around manure pits, but if you're in a grain bin or if you're unloading silage, something like that. Anytime there's areas where there might be some dangerous gases present, if you're not sure if it's safe, wear, you know, some sort of supplemental oxygen apparatus. Skid steers are some of the most useful tools on the farm these days, and are also one of the types of machinery that youth are operating more often because they're small. You know, they're used to do a lot of the little kind of chores around the farm, but also a large source of incident on the farm. So we talk about the dangers of carrying loads too high, especially on unlevel ground, and also hydraulic systems aren't always foolproof, so being aware of the potential for, you know, a load that's being held up by a hydraulic system to fail and crush an operator, somebody that's helping. And this one. It's a PTO shaft. It is an older picture on an older model tractor, but it's missing one key component, which is I had my little pointer. There's supposed to be a shield over this, over the point where the PTO shaft attaches to the tractor, and that can be the most dangerous point on a implement system powered by a tractor, because that's a point of connection that somebody could get a loose piece of clothing caught in, something like that. So we talk a lot about PTO safety, because again, that's in addition to rollovers, PTO entanglements are one of the most common causes of injury or death on the farm. And just to emphasize that, I can play this video that's a part of all tractor safety programs. They always have to do the, I'll see if it starts here. Might not start. Anyway, it's not working, but we do a lot of simulations showing how dangerous, in fact, PTO shafts can be. And this video depicts a dummy made out of straw that's entangled in a PTO shaft and is basically shredded really quickly. So that's one thing we really try to emphasize. And a lot of kids even have stories of family members that have had an accident with a PTO shaft, and I have the same story in my family. So it's something that we always try to emphasize. And with that, we are going to do a quick activity, just testing your reaction time. Because even though we go through the dangers of of working around tractors and moving parts and fast-moving machinery. Kids, especially young kids, always think that they're going to be able to get out of the sticky situation if one was to occur. So what we do with the kids is test their reaction time and then plot it against a chart to see how endangered they would actually be, even if they were able to react as they know, as they think they could. So if you want to come up here, we'll test everyone's reaction times out. Some of you, Erin, I think you've been through this before.
No.
You haven't? Yeah. Okay,
I did it. So.
I did do it a couple years ago. So, okay.
So you're advising all farmers to wear spandex? Is that what you're
right, doing? Yes. No, yeah. You say with the kids, yes. No, no loose clothing, no, you know, loose hair for the girls. And we do require them to demonstrate proper attire every day they come to tractor safety. So if a kid shows up with sandals, he's going home. And, you know, if a girl doesn't have her hair back, we have hair ties. So we try to, you know, kind of make sure that they know throughout the program how they have to dress. Okay, so when you hear the buzzer, you can slap this pad, not too, as you can see, it's kind of been damaged because the kids get a little crazy with this. But it doesn't take much to hit it, and then the timer, it'll show you how fast you're able to react. So, and we also say that, you know, when you're dealing with, there's a lot of distractions on the farm, so you're not always prepared to react, even if you, even if you think you can. Okay, 79 seconds. So, if a PTO shaft rotating at 540 revolutions per minute can pull in loose material at 7 feet per second, you would be wrapped around the PTO shaft. Let's see. How many feet? Cigarette.
Six.
0.79. Yep.
So,
six. Okay. We'll know you're brown. Okay. So 6 feet. You're about 6 feet. So
you did.
Yeah. Yeah. Pretty much left. Okay. One more try. You're not hitting. I don't think you're.
I don't want to hit it.
You're
hard.
Hitting it gently, but okay. You can hit a little harder. There you go, 0.4, okay.
Slapped you.
Right here.
Okay, whack-a-mole.
Okay, you're at 3 feet, so not too bad.
Oh, you lost your legs.
Right.
Okay, who's next?
Or your arm.
My top.
Or your arm.
Yep.
Right.
Okay, let's see. 0.6, okay. That's about 4. 0.5, not bad. 3.75 feet there. Okay, and you're not last, not least. 0.57. Okay.
Ooh, farm girl.
Four. Yes, yes.
Look at that.
She'll be just fine. Yep.
Cat-like reflexes.
But your hair just got caught in it.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Yeah, hair or maybe a drawstring on the sweatshirt, something like that. But so that's something, and of course the kids like to see if they can improve throughout the week. But, you know, in any case, they're never really getting over 0.2, 0.3 seconds, which still proves that that a lot can happen in that amount of time, especially when you're dealing with parts that are rotating really fast or tractors that are moving quickly. So that's kind of one of our key take-home messages for the kids. Other than that, that's all I've got. We had a really great program this year. I've already have a waiting list of 10 kids for next year. I think it just seems to be in high demand, so I'm going to keep offering it. Hopefully next year we'll have somebody in Walworth County that can kind of help out with some of the things. But otherwise this year I've done it once by myself, and it was a long week, but it all worked out. No accidents, which that's all I was really caring about. So
you said it's 24 hours. Is that 4 days, 6 hours? How do you divide that up?
Yes, we did 4 days, 6 hours, and then we have our final day, which is the testing day, and the kids also have take-home homework that they need to do that can contribute to the overall, classroom experience. And then the testing process usually takes, for the written test, it's 50 questions, so They usually get through that pretty quick, and then the driving test, if they don't pass the driving test right away, they do have another opportunity at the end of the day to retake it. We didn't have anybody fail the driving test this year. We did have three kids that didn't pass the written test, but then again, they have another opportunity to make up the test afterwards. So two of them have made it up and they've passed, and the next one is doing it next week. So I hope they'll all be able to get through it and pass. So. Any questions?
Okay. Number three, youth and governance policy recommendations updates. So, give me a minute, because I got to find where I put the email. Sorry. Oh, there it is. Okay. So, Jen Reese, who was at the last meeting, she's the development coordinator, so
yeah,
I think that's her title. She works with the youth, and she's overseeing the YAIC now. She had some thoughts of things that we might want to discuss today and not take any action, but just discuss, and I can fill her in on the discussion about possible changes that we might want to make to the youth and governance program, because I do know, and I mentioned this to her, that one of the youth this current year, I guess, wanted to apply for her second time, but because it was a requirement that she be on the bus tour, she couldn't apply, even though she had been on the bus tour last year because it was her second year. So Supervisor Splitsky had mentioned that maybe we can make it so if you're a second year YIG member, you don't have to be on a required bus tour. Does anyone want to add any discussion or against it or anything like that? You guys just participated in the bus tour, right? How did you like that?
Yeah, I didn't even know half the places like it existed. This is bias.
How about you?
Yeah, I thought it was interesting, but I'm not sure we'd have to do it 2 years in a row.
Okay.
I don't see any point in having it twice. I think that we should require one, especially if they want to reapply and it's a conflict. You know, if they wanted to go on it twice, that'd be one thing, but to make it mandatory.
I don't disagree.
Okay. All right.
Fine, then, thank
you. Okay, so we'll discuss, we have to actually make that a formal policy, but we'll do that next, I think either next month or the following month. I can't remember. So, because we have to actually change the policy for that. And then something that she brought up, and I told her that we have discussed this in the past, but we do have, well, all of us except myself are new to this committee, and so we could discuss it again and see what everyone thinks. Should a youth be able to serve for more than 1 year? So any discussion on that? It's just the reason why we discussed it in the past was because there are only 14 spots and we always have to turn people down. And the question should we allow youth to apply again and take up those spots, or should we make it so it has to be, you can only serve on it once? Supervisor Gould?
I say 1 and 10.
Okay.
If they want to come back the second year, meetings are open, they can attend anytime they want. That's a good point.
And then if it's a one and done, then it kind of negates the previous policy.
True.
I don't necessarily agree with one and done because, I mean, the whole year, 1 year goes by quick.
It's open, youth and governance is open to software. When they apply, they're sophomores and juniors. So when they basically fulfill their term, they're pretty much juniors and seniors. And so the majority of youth and governance that we do get to apply are seniors. And so most of them can't reapply anyway. Last year, if I remember correctly, with the interviews, I think we had 3 reapply. And I know a 4th one did, but she couldn't. Or wanted to, and out of those 3, 2 of them made it and one did not. So I just want you guys to be aware of those facts. Youth, what are your thoughts, or you don't have any right now because you're so new, or what are your thoughts, I mean, with the interview process? And
well, if you're going through the select number of people that you actually put it to the paperwork, and if they're willing to do that again, I mean, you have a list of brand new people, I mean, if that's the best person for the job, I see if you're fit to do a second time, why not?
You agree? Yeah, okay. I guess in the past, and I think Supervisor Skolinski was on this committee at the same time, we agreed with that. And also, I know personally when I'm interviewing a youth that's the second year, I'm a little tougher on them and expect more from their interviews than a first year. You know, obviously I expect them to know what county government does and things like that. So it is a little harder, I believe, at least when I interview them to make it. So if you guys, I guess, want to think about it more and we can discuss it later, just throw that out there. So there were 14 positions. We interviewed 20, right, Supervisor Poole?
Correct.
And I think there were a total of 24 that applied, I think.
But there were a lot of schools where we didn't get anybody applying from.
Well, true, but we had a lot more nominations, and so a lot of kids got nominated but didn't bother to apply. So, and then.
Yeah, I know we can't drag them in the doors.
Exactly.
So a lot of nominations, 24 actually submitted.
I think it was 24.
That includes people from previous years.
Mm-hmm.
Well, only
four. Or three. Well, it would have been four, but it was three.
And that, to me, that doesn't rise to the threshold of wanting to disqualify, second term people.
Right.
If all 14 were coming back and reapplying and, they were taking up space and the new kids couldn't come in, then I'd say, well, maybe that rises to a level we need to do something different.
Most of them age out.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be okay with standing that.
And another thought is they can't serve on the same committee, so it is quite a different experience to be on a different committee. So.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, another question was, should attendance be reviewed at an additional point in time later on in the term? The current policy is that any youth and governance member not attending at least 50% of their committee meetings by the November meeting, including the November meeting, will be asked to step down and an alternate will take their place on the committee. She's saying she was informed that order attendance check was suggested with the following ramifications. If they don't meet the 50%, the youth rep would be asked to step down from their role and not be allowed to list youth and governance representative on their resume or applications and not receive a reference. The position would remain empty since it would be too late to ask an alternate to step in. So thoughts?
At the interview process, if you were to pick potential alternates at that time,
we do.
You do.
Mm-hmm.
So, at the November time frame, it's too late to ask somebody.
No, it's not. No.
Oh.
Right now, we check in November,
yeah.
And if they're below the 50%, they're done,
okay.
And we put alternates in.
Okay.
What they're saying is to check in, let's say February again.
Oh, I see.
And if they still, or if at that point they're at less than 50%, then they're done. We tell them they can't list it as a reference, or we won't give them a reference. They can't list it on their resumes or anything. But at that point, we won't appoint a replacement because it's only March, April, and possibly May at that time. So there's only really 2 or 3 months.
So we're just asking if we should check again in February.
Mm-hmm. And have ramifications based on that.
I'm for, you know, holding their feet to the fire. I mean, you know, once you pass the November threshold, I mean, I would assume most that are participating in the program are self-motivated kids anyway, but if there's no other, you know, ramifications after that, then you may have a tendency to slip. Just thinking out loud, but.
I was thinking though, in November, by the time you hit November, they'd only have to attend 3 meetings to make the 50%.
No, because it starts in May, so well, May, June, July, August, September, October, November. So they have to attend 4. And so, some are right at 50%, so they're fine still. It's when they're below
50%.
Yeah, at least 50%. So if they're below 50%, then they're done. They're done. So if they're at 50%, let's say, I mean, they could be at 60, let's say 60%, and then moving on, they still have relatively poor attendance. There's no ramifications after that point.
What was the thought process behind the 50% threshold? Because that seems kind of low.
Yeah.
I don't know. That was enacted before. You know, that was before my time, so a couple of years before us. Most of the kids, I would say, are probably at 70% or better, I think. I think there's a few that are there. And I know, since I've been on this committee, we kicked off one person, and then another. He missed 50%, but he came and asked to explain why he missed, and so we let him continue. I think that's all that we picked up. But I personally have noticed a drop-off after that November, that some of them do kind of, oh, it's not that important anymore, so I won't take it as seriously.
I noticed that last year.
You did?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But I know we talked when Teddy was still here about, you know, once they go to that award ceremony at the end, if there could be some sort of repercussion with that. If you only make 50% of the meetings, you shouldn't be awarded with the same people that have made 90%.
Right.
You know what I mean? So.
Well, but the thing is the kids, the attendance doesn't matter. It's not like they're just saying that they're a youth. When they're putting it on their resume or their college applications, they're just putting youth in governance. It's not like they're going to put on their attendance. That's the thing, is that they can put it on their college resumes and things like that.
Unless there was a special designation that recognized those that achieved an attendance threshold of 90% or 80%, and they could be youth in governance,
right.
Honor society.
Right.
Or something along leading edge society, you know, something cool and whatever. Yeah. I offer the carrot, I suppose.
I've looked at it as like youth in governance program. So if you don't complete the program, you can't put that on your resume.
There's nothing in the policy that says
you're not,
you know, once you
maybe
hit
that's
that November.
What we should look at in the policy is changing whether you complete the program. If you don't complete the program, or if you don't complete the term, then you don't get it on your resume.
Right, and this is at the same time as putting that in the policy, where if at the three-quarter mark, let's say not November, you are above 50%, you can't put it on your application or resume.
I agree
so
with that.
It kind of ties it together.
Then they wouldn't attend the award ceremony anyway.
Right.
Done.
Right.
That would make it fair for the people that actually do put the work in.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Because it's kind of a lot. What are your thoughts?
Are the people that like sub in, do they have to go on, like say if someone was to kick off, you know, the people that you say you have like a backup for them?
Mm-hmm.
Do they have to go on the bus tour then? Because don't you have to?
No, that doesn't matter. No, because they aren't selected. They're
the
subs.
So
they're not on the bus tour. It's like
In December or November, we would call and say, hey, we have an open spot. Would you like to, do you have time, you know, would you like to take that spot? Basically, that's what happens. So, and last year, not this year, last year we had one, Mr. McCarthy, he came in halfway through on this committee, right? No, previous year. He came in on this committee halfway through, obviously missed the bus tour. So he was a junior and he reapplied and as a senior got to be here a full term. So he was here a year and a half on a different committee though. I guess, you know, I should ask Jen if she can to look at the attendance the past couple of years if they have it, to see if there is a significant drop off after November. Should we do that? Okay. All right. Anything else on that topic for attendance or anything?
Yeah, I think it ought to be at least 60%.
Okay. Well, okay.
Yeah, you too.
All right. We can make that
happen. I would have gone higher, but.
Okay. One of the problems is there's only, okay, let's say legislative committee where we've canceled how many meetings literally in the past year. Probably from last year, this is just a guess, we probably had our May meeting, which they would have probably missed. So we could have had our June meeting, not a July, not an August, had a September and an October. So we might have only had four meetings. And they could have, you only missed two. It can work out where, yeah.
A whole bunch of things that I would love to miss, but I can't miss because, you know, livelihood depends on it.
Right, no, I agree, but these are also, you know, high schoolers that some of them have like sports. vacations scheduled already in the summer that they, you know, like you missed last month because you were
in Canada. Canada and Seattle, yeah.
Because you had a vacation.
Yeah, we had planned it way before I even knew I was going.
Right, exactly. So, okay, all right, we'll take it up at the next meeting that we want to discuss that when Jen's back and talk about that also. So I think that's it, that's on our list. Does anyone else have any other thoughts or comments on youth and governance? Any policies that you think might need tweaking or changing or anything like that?
Can I just ask why they're only asked to attend one county board meeting?
They used to not have to attend any.
Oh,
that's relatively new, probably within the last three years, that's approximately. And that's just so they can see what a county board meeting is. Obviously, they can't attend more. They just are required to attend one. So
there's really not a reason as to why. Just to see, I mean, because it's difficult to understand the whole process if you don't see it from start to finish. If you're just seeing what happens at committee, but you don't see what's
right.
Carried out at the county board.
And that's why we want them to attend one, so they can see, you know, see the what happens in the committee, and then if hopefully they attend one where their stuff is on the county board floor, they can see it to completion. Else? No? Okay. All right. Let me go back to the agenda. Number four, Next Generation Cooperative Extension Reorganization Update.
So not much more to update other than the fact that, and I think this was announced at the last meeting perhaps, that Beth Baker, who is currently the...
It was not.
Okay.
After our meeting.
Okay. So, yep. Beth Baker, who is the director of Racine County UAV Extension, has been appointed as the director for the joint Kenosha-Racine UAV Extension area. So, She is in Madison for a training today, I think, for the new director positions. And I think she'll be starting her position officially next week and kind of figuring out what her schedule is going to be, when she'll be in Kenosha County, when she'll be in Racine County. And she will be present for the August PDEC meeting. So she'll be here, and I think she'll be able to talk more about kind of the next year and what it will bring in terms of staffing for both offices and the arrangements that will be made. So that's all I really have for the
update. The her position across the state, not just hers, but it is completely different from what she was doing before, correct?
She and Bev was, Teddy, whereas Teddy was more of a director, she was very administrative focused. Bev did a lot of programming in the family, in family living area. So she is having to do a transition to be solely administrative across the two counties.
But this is administrative even more so than being a director.
Yes, it's more administrative, and I think up front there's going to be a whole lot more administration in terms of, you know, her establishing relationship with county government here and, you know, working out budget items and things going forward for staffing. So it is going to, it's definitely more. So she is giving up all of her family living programming activities that she has done in Racine County to solely focus on administration of both Kenosha and Racine County UW Extension. So, and that, that's across the board. That's, it's, you know, these people aren't going to be doing programming. Their focus is administrative, keeping up relations with county government and so on. So,
and also, I can't remember who, I don't know if it was Amy Growl that emailed me back last week, last month. I asked about how we were going to offer contracts when they're switching the budget years from fiscal to opposite or whatever. And they said they're going to have an interim contract where it's just 6 months to get us through until January to have a new contract. That is a full year contract.
Right.
So
I believe that's correct. So
will that take place then starting in January, or
I can't remember when we signed our contracts.
Yeah,
I'm already in July.
Right. And I had just gotten mine. I believe it only goes to January. I didn't take good enough look at it, obviously. But yeah, the timeline I haven't really been too focused on that, so I'm not sure the specifics. But Bev will probably, and I'm sure Bev, even before the August meeting, I expect her to put out some sort of communication, hopefully,
because
to people, to introduce herself and also just give some basic.
Well, the state budget was, is July 1st through July 1st, and ours is January 1st through January 1st, so mm-hmm. we're always off by 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
So now they're going to align, UW Extension is going to align where we're January to January. So that's, okay.
So that's all I've got for that update.
Okay, number 5, UW Extension Educator Program Updates.
Yeah, so obviously it's just me and Nancy, and Nancy, I guess we can start off with you. I'll have you introduce yourself, and I don't think any of you have met Nancy, so she can tell you what she's doing with UW Extension and some of the other Kenosha County departments.
I think I've met some of you, but I'm Nancy Ratana. I'm the new Communications and Educational Support Specialist with UW Extension. I've been here for 7 months so far, and it's been pretty busy, a couple of 7 months, so I'm just going to talk to you guys about what I've been working on so far. A big thing is we officially launched our Facebook page. So it's been a long time coming with the county getting into social media, and our UW Extension and the Parks Facebook pages are like the pilot Facebook pages. And I have, since I'm the communications person in the office, I have free reign of the, well, not free reign, but I monitor more closely the UW Extension page, whereas Parks has to go through Joe Potente, which is our new communications person for the county. So like us on Facebook, just search Kenosha County UWEX. We've also created a closed group for 4-H in the hopes that we'll try to minimize the troubled communication amongst the different 4-H pages that there are on Facebook already. And we're trying to, it's a closed group because most of the 4-H announcements are related just to 4-H members. So we're trying to invite our 4-H people through 4-H online, and it'll be just a place, a centralized place where Bethany can share quick updates, like applications are due or registrations are open and whatnot. So we're trying to get people more excited about that and to actually join it. When I first started, I assisted on the employee survey launch and development there. So that was my first project back in December and January. I've been helping Amy Grile a lot when on her different community-related projects when it comes to her work with the Commission on the Arts. I was a photographer at one of the Mahone Fund's events. And I've also recently, with our whole Uptown Village Brass community meetings, I've been translating flyers and whatnot for the community so as we can reach a wider audience. And I've been attending as an interpreter to those meetings as well. And along with that, also with Building Our Future, so I've been getting more community exposure. And I'm bilingual, so I'm trying to take advantage or helping everyone take advantage of that because we need to.
It's good to have it in the house.
Civil rights compliance, definitely. So then, as part of my communications works, I've been updating brochures and streamlining communication. We've also launched our Eventbrite page, which will help with registrations and RSVPs for certain events. We're trying to find a better way to allow people to pay online when it comes to registration. So I've been helping, working with the county and our Civic Plus people, which is our website platform, to figure out a way that'll be easiest for everyone to use the whole online payment system. We've also have a College Compare app that will be launching later this summer, and I think this was a program that they worked on last year through YouthQuest. So this College Compare app will be used by students and and their families attending college visits throughout the summer or whenever. And it's a really cool concept where the students and parents can go into the app, pick certain things that they want to compare through different schools. And you can compare it, put your comments in it, rate certain things from the schools, and then you can print it. So just send it to like a local printer and whatnot. So I'm working on the design and how we're gonna market this thing to the community. What else have I done? I'm really fortunate to be in this position because I have a lot of flexibility when it comes to working with different areas. I'm a part of the Kenosha Health Improvement Project Board, and I designed their signage for the local farmers markets in Kenosha. So that's been really fun working with different organizations. And my position is unique in the sense that I work with it with different departments as well. So besides UW Extension, I've also been taking a big part in the parks works. So I've been helping with their 90th anniversary PR and marketing, supervising some interns, so that's fun. And I also am a grant writer for them, so writing some grants, and it's pretty exciting. We're finalists with an EPA grant that we hopefully might get awarded for Pike River Restoration and Petrifying Springs Park. And with planning and development, I design and write up their Compass Points newsletter, which is a quarterly newsletter that's released. And I'm also working on designing some images and like a manual for their zoning ordinances. So I do a little bit of everything, and whatever comes my way, I'm here. So I'm excited, and I'm glad to be working with UW Extension. So, yeah.
It's kind of very busy.
Yeah, definitely.
Other than that, since we don't have any other educators here, there's not much to update on. I did want to let you know that the Farm Fresh Atlas statewide website, the brand new website, is now live. So if you guys have a chance to go online and check it out, either on your phone, it is mobile friendly, or on your computer, the address is farmfreshatlas.org. Real simple. So check it out, see what you think. If you have any questions or feedback, just let me know, and we'll pass that on to the developers. So we're going to be doing a big media campaign to promote the awareness for that new resource for the state. So,
okay. Thank you. And I do not know why number six is on there.
What was number six?
At UW Extension Director Updates.
Hey. Hi, Bev.
Well, she's not the director, is she? She's the administrator.
They call, they're going to be called Area Extension Directors,
okay.
AEDs.
Okay.
So,
okay. Yes. Sounds like a manipulator.
Yeah. Exactly. It's the same, yeah.
Okay, well,
Then I guess we are done and we can reconvene in the public hearing room at 7 o'clock. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Oh, yes.